Welcome to The Debate. Today, we're really unpacking the news, defining executive power, this massive challenge to institutional independence. We saw this Friday, September 19th, 2025. We are illuminating different perspectives on the federal news update. I am Carter Regan.
And I'm Carter Bush.
Yeah, the defining thread really running through today's news is this aggressive assertion of executive authority. Specifically, it seems aimed at stripping the insulation, that protection, from independent federal agencies. We've seen the Fifth Circuit ruling, you know, challenging the very structure of the National Labor Relations Board. And at the same time, the administration's emergency request to the Supreme Court regarding the Federal Reserve Board of Governors.
Right. And this is, look, this is more than just standard legal wrangling. It signals a fundamental constitutional confrontation, and one that cuts right to the stability of our core institutions.
So our central question today, I think, is whether this sweeping challenge to the for-cause removal protections for key officials represents a necessary restoration of constitutional separation of powers and executive accountability, or conversely, if this is frankly an unprecedented and dangerous erosion of the institutional checks vital for legal and economic stability.
And I'm going to argue that this is absolutely a dangerous power grab. It fundamentally threatens the nonpartisan integrity required for these agencies to even function effectively.
The unaccountable administrative state, this sprawling bureaucracy under the direct authority of the elected executive, which is exactly where the Constitution intends for that power to reside. Okay, so my argument really starts with accountability. For nearly a century, the administrative state has operated largely outside the direct control of the president, who is, let's remember, the only person elected by the entire country to manage the executive branch. Now, this situation is constitutionally untenable. The Fifth Circuit ruling on the NLRB is absolutely critical here. It found that the removal protections for NLRB administrative law judges and board members likely violate the separation of powers. And why? Because Congress essentially tied the hands of the president to manage the executive branch, creating this bizarre structure where the person responsible for executing the laws has zero control over the people actually doing the executing. This ruling finally addresses a fundamental constitutional flaw. And that same principle, it applies directly to the Federal Reserve challenge. The administration's emergency request regarding Governor Lisa Cook's removal, well, that's the ultimate test of presidential authority over the economy. The president has a mandate, an electoral mandate, to maximize prosperity. Yet, here we have the central bank, the Fed, actively, it seems, thwarting that goal by only implementing a small rate cut, much less than the president publicly demanded. When alignment on monetary policy is so critical for economic stability, allowing the Fed to operate as this completely autonomous entity, it just undermines the democratic process. This isn't destabilizing. It's about correcting a century-old structural misstep that shielded powerful actors from any real accountability.
Okay, I have to push back hard on that notion of correction, this purported restoration of power. It's just a pretext. Let's be clear. The actual goal here is centralizing short-term political control, which fundamentally destroys the integrity of these agencies. Their entire long-term purpose is to make decisions based on facts and precedent, divorced from the, you know, the 2 or 4 year election cycle. When we actually look at the NLRB situation, the Fifth Circuit decision is a massive blow, precisely because it intentionally diverges from established precedent like Humphrey's executor. That case established that independent agencies require insulation exactly because they perform quasi-judicial and quasi-legislative functions. The immediate practical effect? It's devastating for workers. It allows powerful corporations like SpaceX in this instance to get injunctions and just halt the prosecution of unfair labor practices.
Lauren McFerrin, the former NLRB chair, emphasized that the board must function like a court, adjudicating facts. Now, if the president can just fire an administrative law judge at will, how can any worker possibly trust that the decision isn't based on whether their employer is a major political donor or, you know, a close ally of the executive? That directly denies due process. It's that simple. And likewise, this emergency Supreme Court appeal concerning the Fed, Trump v. Cook, it's an extraordinary, frankly, unprecedented attack on the central bank's independence.
Economists widely agree, this isn't controversial, that market confidence is predicated on the idea that the central bank is making data-driven decisions, not politically expedient ones.
The risk of higher inflation, long-term market instability, the kind that impacts every single American's retirement fund, their 401k, is incredibly real if investors start fearing that independent governors will simply be replaced by political loyalists just to satisfy immediate policy demands. The functional integrity of our financial and labor institutions absolutely requires insulation from these short-term political pressures. So I want to return to your core premise. You argue that the removal protections for NLRB officials are unconstitutional because they shield decision makers from executive accountability. But isn't the quasi-judicial, the politically sensitive nature of the NLRB precisely why it needs that insulation? If accountability just means the president can interfere with a specific labor case decision because of, I don't know, political whim or favor, then we completely lose the core guarantee of due process under the National Labor Relations Act. That insulation isn't some constitutional anomaly. It's a fundamental safeguard of the law's fair application.
That's an interesting point, Carter, though I would frame the stakes quite differently. The Constitution demands a clear line of authority. We simply cannot accept the argument that accountability somehow violates due process. Accountability is due process for the American people. The president is responsible to the public for the execution of laws, period. When Congress attempts to create some kind of fourth branch of government by shielding vast numbers of executive policy and enforcement officials from the elected head of that branch, it fundamentally violates Article 2. This isn't about interfering in individual cases, not really. It's about defining who is ultimately responsible for the overall policy direction and, yes, the administration of the executive state.
But this focus on accountability, it feels profoundly selective, doesn't it? Especially when we look at the administration's other policy priorities announced just today. I mean, if the objective is truly better function and balanced governance, why are we seeing such a massive and frankly dangerous shift in national security resources? For instance, the reconciliation bill allocated $1 billion to boost U.S. offensive cyber operations. Okay? Yet, simultaneously, it included cuts of nearly $1.2 billion from civilian defensive cybersecurity funding across multiple agencies.
Hold on, what does civilian cyber funding have to do with the NLRB or the Fed's independence? That seems like a completely different topic.
It has everything to do with it. It shows the true objective isn't stable function, it's centralized, aggressive political control. The cuts hit agencies like CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. These are the agencies, CISA and NIST, that provide the foundational resources, the frameworks, the information sharing that private sectors, especially critical infrastructure like hospitals and water utilities, rely on for defense. So, by diminishing the capacity of these vital civilian agencies, you undermine our national security resilience against attack. This whole shift demonstrates that the administration is prioritizing centralized, aggressive, politically driven action, even if it means sacrificing the stable functionality of necessary administrative bodies across the board. It's a pattern.
Then, because the economic imperative here clearly justifies the executive's moves on the Federal Reserve, the president is elected to steer the economy, right? And the White House issued a press release today highlighting booming economic indicators, mortgage rates at a three-year low, rising real wages, record stock market highs, all of which are potentially being constrained by a central bank that is, let's face it, overtly cautious. Securing control over monetary policy via the Supreme Court isn't some nefarious attack. It is a perfectly legitimate exercise of executive authority aimed at maximizing prosperity for the American people, steered the way the elected government believes it should be.
That's a compelling argument if your only horizon is the next election cycle, perhaps. But have you actually considered the potentially catastrophic cost to long-term stability? The foundational principle, the bedrock of market confidence, relies entirely on the Fed operating free from political pressure. You talk about maximizing prosperity, but economists across the spectrum warn that successfully challenging the Fed's independence could lead to severe long-term consequences. Investors will lose confidence if they believe monetary policy decisions are driven by election cycles rather than sound, long-term economic data. That resulting instability is a far, far greater threat to the nation's prosperity than whether the Fed cut rates by 25 basis points or 50. What the administration is doing is trading long-term credibility for immediate, short-sighted policy influence. It's reckless.
Well, I'm just not convinced by that line of reasoning, because the Supreme Court defining a constitutional boundary doesn't automatically equate to instability. It equates to clarity. That's what courts do. If the court clarifies the president's removal authority, it simply defines the constitutional rulebook, establishes the ground rules. Furthermore, look, this push for executive coherence, for control, it's visible across the entire government today. Look at the new aggressive trade fraud task force announced. This move centralizes customs enforcement under the Department of Justice, shifting its focus away from just administrative penalties towards actual criminal prosecution to ensure trade policy aligns directly with the stated national interest. This shows a clear commitment to policy coherence across the entire executive landscape, from labor to trade to finance. It's about unified action.
And that very centralization, criminalizing trade enforcement, gutting civilian cyber defense, and attempting to fire independent Fed governors, is exactly the pattern that we find so deeply alarming. It replaces transparent, deliberative, and stable governance with a centralized, aggressive political mandate driven by ideology.
Look, the events of the day, I believe, underscore a necessary and a constitutional effort to re-centralize federal authority under the executive branch where it belongs. This ensures policy coherence and, crucially, responsiveness to the public mandate across economic, security, and administrative landscapes. And yes, this includes correcting these long-standing constitutional anomalies concerning independent agencies and utilizing robust tools to advance the national agenda.
Well, the evidence points, I think, quite clearly to an unprecedented attempt to politicize previously nonpartisan institutions that are vital for due process and economic stability. The assaults on the NLRB and the Fed, coupled with the dangerous erosion of civilian resilience resources, it reveals a consistent pattern where institutional norms are just being sacrificed for the direct exercise of centralized political power, guided only by immediate political objectives.
We can certainly agree, I think, that the judiciary, and particularly the Supreme Court, has now emerged as the definitive battleground. It's where the constitutional boundaries of executive power and the very viability of the modern administrative state will be decided.
Absolutely. There's no question. The ultimate ruling in cases like Trump v. Cook, well, it's going to define the federal landscape for decades to come. And it forces every American, really, to weigh the necessity of centralized executive strength against the equally critical necessity of stable institutional independence.
Indeed. And we leave that critical question with our listeners.